Welcome to the second tutorial. So yesterday we were Daniel. Okay, so welcome to the second tutorial. So yesterday we dealt with normal approximations by using Mallerian calculus and the Stein's method. And today I would like to deal with Poisson approximation, the connection between the two of them. So yesterday, the bound that we obtained yesterday was this one. So if you have a function which is a functional of an underlying Poisson measure with mean zero that is in the domain of the derivative, Mallerian derivative, then you can bound the Wasserstein distance between the distribution of f and the distribution of a Gaussian n01 random variable by means of the sum of two moments, the moment of this, the difference between one and this scalar product, and then the expectation of the integral of the square of the Mallerian derivative times the absolute value of dl minus 1 of f, where mu is the control measure of the underlying Poisson measure mu. And so, just to tell you that, usually, just a quick note that will become handy later, is that how do people deal with this kind of thing? So the first step is always to deal directly with this one, maybe by applying Cauchy-Schwarz first to transform this in a variance. And then the other step is very often to bound this once again by means of the Cauchy-Schwarz inequality. And so in terms of the fourth power of the difference operator and the square of this guy here. So usually people therefore write that this is less or equal than the expectation, okay, on the same thing, so the same scalar product, plus, so it is the square root of the integral of df to the power 4 d mu times the square root of the integral of dl minus 1 of f square d mu. Okay, so this is the typical way people prove that, for instance, the central limit theorem takes place. They show that this converges to zero, the first term, that this is bounded, which is very often the case, and that this converges to zero. And let me write, give a name to these guys here. So I will write, this is AF plus B1 of F times B2 of F. Okay? So just for future reference, these are the quantities that enter the bound. So I will keep this notation here for future reference. So now we are going to deal with Poisson approximation. So the framework will be the following. We are going to consider a random variable f, which is once again a random variable in the measurable with respect and square integrable with respect to the underlying Poisson measure. We are going to consider f to be a random variable with values in z plus. Okay, so it's an integer-valued random variable. And f will be, we have some mean, lambda. And our problem is to compare the distribution of f with the distribution of a Poisson random variable with parameter lambda. Okay, so how these two random variables compare. And if possible, we would like to obtain a bound that has the same flavor of the one that I wrote down there. Okay, so in order to do that, we can use another method which is connected with the Stein's method that I described yesterday, which is called the Chen-Stein method. Okay, so Louis Chen was a PhD student of Charles Stein. Charles Stein had developed his method for normal approximations, and he proposed to Louis Chen to develop a method for Poisson approximation, and this was really the starting point of an explosion of research in the domain in the late 70s and then all the 80s and 90s by people like that I mentioned yesterday, like Andrew Barber, etc. And so the Chen-Stein method really goes in parallel in several instances to the Stein's method. So you start with a lemma, and you say that a random variable, let's say u with values in z plus, is distributed. So consider a random variable like this, that u is distributed according to a Poisson distribution with parameter lambda. So if and only if the expectation of is equal to lambda, the expectation of f u plus 1. Okay, and usually this is true. This should be true for every bounded function f. Okay, you take for every bounded function f. So the proof of this lemma, which is Chen-Stein lemma, is very easy. The proof is, it can be the same as in the Gaussian case. You start with the observation that the Poisson lambda distribution is determined by the moment, and then by wise choice of the test function f, you can prove that this relation, if verified by random variable, implies a recurrence relation on the moment, which is exactly the same relation which is given by the, which is the one that characterizes the moment of Poisson, and therefore U must be Poisson. And on the other hand, if U is a Poisson distribution, then you just write down this explicitly as a series, two series, and you identify the terms, and this goes out perfectly. Once you have a, so now the idea is the same. Now, suppose you have a random variable such that these two quantities are not equal, but very close. So how you can compare, therefore, the distribution of U with that of a Poisson lambda distribution, then you have, therefore, an equation that you can solve. So, and the equation, for instance, you can associate an equation to any subset of Z plus. Okay? And so the equation is given by the following. So the indicator of n is an equation for functions that have Z plus as domain. So the indicator of A of k minus the probability that a Poisson random variable with parameter lambda is equal to k, belongs to A. Okay. This is the left-hand side. Everything is no. You fix A. And then this must be equal to, so let's say, lambda fk plus 1 minus k f times k. Okay? And this is exactly the thing that would be inside this expectation here. And now what happens is that you can solve this equation recursively. And indeed, the solution to this equation is uniquely determined except for the point k equal to 0, where you can choose whatever you want. But in any case, you can solve the equation, you can write down in a recursive way the solution to this equation and find out that the solutions for every A satisfy bounds that do not depend on the choice of A, which is the main point of the technology given by Stein's method. So you have this equation, and therefore you have a proposition that tells you that for every A, so let's call this equation Dagger. So for every A, Dagger admits a solution FA. Okay? So I told you there is an infinity of choices of solution because you can fix F0 however you want. And so, and you such that FA is bounded by 1, for instance. This is not at all the optimal constant you can choose. And then you have that delta of FA is less or equal than 1 minus exponential of minus lambda over lambda, and D2 of FA is less or equal than twice 1 minus exponential minus lambda square over lambda. I think these are the correct. Yeah, no, this is 1 over lambda, and this is 1 over lambda square. Okay. And so, where, of course, I denote by dg of k the forward difference operator. Okay? So, and so what is interesting here is that now that all these bounds are independent of A, and these factors here that bound a differences operator are called in the literature, I mean, especially by the people in the domain of Stein's method, the Stein's magic factors, because they are magic in some way that I don't know exactly. But okay, these are quite sharp estimates anyway. Okay, so these are quite sharp estimates that are very useful in several occasions. And so now there is another remark. So you are going to apply these bounds here to bound the total variation distance between F and the Poisson distribution. Okay. Now there is another remark that is, so in one way, the proof of the bound will be exactly the same. The structure will be different, and it will be interesting to compare the two of them. But okay. So the remark is that at a certain point we are going to work in a discrete setting, and we will be forced to deal with some sort of discrete version of the Taylor expansion that we had yesterday. And so if you remember well, if you have a function that starts, that has domain in Z plus and that takes values in R, then what you can do, you can write down a discrete equivalent of a Taylor expansion that is given as follows. You take the difference between FK and FA, and then you subtract from this delta FA multiplied by K minus A. Okay, so this is exactly the one-term Taylor expansion. You would like to find out what is the error you make by replacing this difference by this difference, and this you can prove that this will be always less than d2f infinity norm divided by 2, and then if you don't have the k minus a to the power 2, but you have the following factorial, and so less or equal than this times k minus a and k minus a minus 1. Okay, so this is the discrete version of the Taylor expansion. Now you can prove that this is true, but it's a recursive argument that is quite easy to write down. Okay, so this is what we are going to denote. So now, what we want to do is to compare, therefore, the probability that f, the f that I wrote here, belongs to a, and minus. To control the difference between the probability that f belongs to a and the probability that the Poisson random variable with parameter lambda also belongs to a. Okay? And so in order to do that, I write this as the expectation of the left-hand side of this equation, as before. So this will be the expectation of the indicator of a of f minus the probability that p o lambda belongs to a. Then, okay, then I can replace the left-hand side with the right-hand side by choosing the good version of the solution. That is interesting. So I can write this as L. So, okay, L, the expectation of F A, F plus 1 minus F F A of F. Okay, and then I can start working out all my magic. No, all the tricks that I put into practice yesterday. So the idea now is to compare this expectation with this expectation. Now the only additional, which is not a difficult, the only difference from yesterday is that f is not centered because it is a function with positive values. Okay, so you cannot apply this integration by path formula directly because you need at least either f or little f or a of f to be a center one. So you center the variable, okay, and you end up with something which is interesting. So you subtract here and you add the lambda, okay. So you subtract lambda here. Which gives you the following, lambda, the expectation of, okay, this, I'm sorry, this, the lambda here is inside the expectation, of course, and not outside the expectation. So this will give the expectation of lambda delta FA of capital F minus F minus lambda, and then FA of capital F. Okay? Now, I can just, now this is a central random variable, and then I can write that this expectation of F minus lambda times F A capital F is equal, due to the formula from yesterday, to the expectation of the inner product of D F A of F, and then minus D L minus 1 of F. And then as yesterday, I can apply this, as yesterday I applied the Taylor formula, I can apply the discrete formula, and I can take absolute value, and I can use all the bounds that are there in order to obtain the following bound that I'm going to write. That is, in order, so, so finally, so by using the discrete Taylor expansion and this Stein's magic factor, we will end up with the fact that the distance in total variation between F and the Poisson lambda distribution, which is given by the supremum over all subset of Z plus of exactly the probability they have here, the probability that F belongs to A minus the probability that the Poisson lambda belongs to A, will be less or equal than, once again, the sum of two objects. So the first one is given by the bound of on the first forward operator, exponential, minus lambda over lambda, the expectation of the absolute value of lambda minus df minus d l minus 1 of f. Okay? And the other one is the rest, exactly as yesterday. So it has the same flavor as that one. But you have, okay, you have to use this. You have a 2 in the magic factor that simplifies with this. So everything you are left with is what the 1 minus the exponential of minus lambda over lambda square. And therefore, the expectation of the integral over x of, so you will have the absolute value dl minus 1 of f. And then instead of having the square, you have the following factorial, okay? Which will be df times df minus 1 integrated with respect to d mu, okay? And so the only difference between the two terms is a minus 1, basically. Either in the two bounds is the presence of the minus 1. But it is apparently the only difference because there are no colors. So there are two differences in this bound, okay? So one difference is here. The fact that you have df minus 1 instead of df. And the other one is that in this bound that I deduced yesterday, you are comparing this object here, this scalar product here, with 1, where 1 is the target variance, the variance of the target random variables. Whereas here, you are comparing the same object here with lambda, where lambda is the mean of the original random variable f. Okay, and so remark, which is interesting, again, by integration by parts, one can prove that the expectation of df minus dl minus 1 of f is exactly equal to the variance. Okay? Yeah. To the variance of f, okay, and of course lambda is equal to the expectation of f, and so in this case the first term respects the intuition that I pointed out yesterday before the end of the talk, that is that whenever one deals with Poisson approximations, usually one ends up with some estimate that allow one to compare the variance with the mean. Okay, and whenever the variance and the mean are close, then the bound is small because the Poisson distribution is characterized by the fact of having constant cumulants, but in Poisson approximation, only the first two cumulants are useful in many, many occasions. Okay, so these are similar bounds with two important differences. One is here, one is here, and of course the main difference is also that f is a discrete random variable, etc. Okay, so as I told, this term gives, if you now study Poisson approximation results, that and you really are interested in rates of convergence, so this term gives good rates of convergence. They basically, on the known examples, coincide with the ones by Barbour, Chen, etc. But this one is a sort of a parasite term that breaks all these good rates. Okay, so this is some sort of, but. In general, this framework is very general, and so the random variable f is just some random variable with values in z plus, and not, for instance, the sum of indicators, etc. So the structure is multidimensional and more general. And there is a paper which followed this result. This is a result that I had approved by myself, I don't know, maybe in 2011. And there is a paper just a few months after, once again by Matthias Schulte and Christoph Thele. And this is a paper in SPA, maybe in 2012, where all these bounds are combined by some general results by Kallenberg in order to study the asymptotic behavior of some point processes that are generated by geometric U statistics in a very, very general setting. So these have already been useful in some occasion. So what I would like to point out now is another result that mixes the two of them, the two bounds, the Gaussian one and the Poisson one, in the light of this result. And let me give to this bound the name of C of f. Okay, so this is C of f. This is another quantity C of f. You have a, b1, b2, and C of f. Now there is at a certain point we were interested with a fellow postdoc in my group that now is in Carnegie Mellon, Solenburgan, we just wanted to have like a sort of the final statement in where we had all these estimates, Gaussian and Poisson estimates, in a fully multidimensional setting. So some sort of estimate that measures the distance between some random vector and the vector composed of Poisson random variables and Gaussian random variable, both in any dimension. Okay. So now I'm just focusing on the case where you have one Gaussian and one Poisson random variables. So this is a proposition, and is by, so it's Solenburgan plus myself. It will be somewhere in the Electronic Journal of Probability. And what we have is the following. So suppose you have two random variables. We have a random variable G that is square integrable, that is centered, and it is in the domain of the derivative. Okay, you want to compare this random variable with the Gaussian. And then you have another random variable F, once again in L2, with values in Z plus, and with some mean expectation of F is equal to lambda. Okay, and now you consider another vector, a vector P n, such that P has a Poisson distribution with mean lambda, and n is a Gaussian n01 random variable in such a way that n and P are stochastically independent. Okay, and now you want to compare for some distance that I'm not going to describe, which is a distance that is large enough to imply convergence in distribution, you want to compare this distance between the distribution of the vector fg and the vector pn. Okay, so this is the distribution, and what you have is the following: is that, so this is less or equal than some constant k, which is completely explicit. It depends on the parameters, and I can write it down if you want. And also, okay, here, let me call this second term in the first inequality b of f. Okay, I call this b of f. Okay, and so now you want to compare these two guys here. So for some constant, the distance between two objects here is given by the sum of the bound for the Gaussian approximation. So you want to compare G with N. So you will have A of G plus B of G, as written down here, okay, plus the bound for the Poisson approximation. So it will be C of F, okay, plus C of F. And then plus another term, just one term, with just one expectation, plus D of F and G, which is the one that determines the dependence between the two of them. Okay, where D of FG is equal to some universal constant there is not even a constant, and it is given by the expectation of the integral of the absolute value of dl minus 1 of g times, okay, the absolute value of df integrated with respect to d mu. Okay, you just have these two guys here, and this is the only thread that make f and g dependent. Okay, now what happens is that this guy here is a very fragile thread and is broken systematically in all the examples I know, whenever this bound, the second bound, converges to zero. So in any example, the convergence of this bound to zero and some really very weak assumption of f breaks, makes this term d of fg converge to zero in such a way that you have systematically asymptotic independence. Okay? So let me write down the argument. Sorry?
It's of no use to use Hilbert's inequality.
It is exactly Hilbert inequality. It's exactly this one. Okay, so it's a very easy argument, but with a twist at the end. Okay, so the typical situation. So typical situation. Therefore, now suppose that you want to use this bound in order to prove central limit theorem to see what happens. So the typical situation is that of a random variable such that, so you have that A of, you have a sequence of random variables now. That AGN converges to zero. This is the first term in the bound for the Gaussian approximation. Okay? Then you have that B2 of GN is bounded by some constant. So it is a bounded sequence, the second one. And then the one that involves the fourth power converges to zero. So B1 of GN converges to zero. These are all the examples, for instance, that use this technique to prove convergence results for the Gilbert graph. They just happen to have exactly this behavior. All the results in the Reitzner and Schulte paper have exactly this phenomenon. So this is for the Gaussian part. And for the other part, you just have that CF N converges to zero, and that, for instance, you have that the integral, the expectation of the integral of the absolute value of dfn square d mu is bounded by some finite constant. Okay, is uniformly bounded by some constant. Okay, so you have that all these things are true. So this is the typical situation that happens, and this means that now if you consider dfn of gn. Okay, you can apply Hölder inequality, and this gives you that this is less or equal than the expectation of the integral of dl minus g to the power 4, d mu to the power 4, and then times the to the power 1 over 4, and then times the expectation of the integral of df to the power 4 over 3, d mu, up to the power 3 over 4, if I'm not wrong. Okay, this is an application of Hölder inequality. And here you have n, and here you have n. Now, if you remember, l minus 1 of g can be represented, since first talk, as an integral over 0, 1 of a semigroup. And therefore, you can apply without problems here Jensen inequality in order to prove that this quantity here is indeed less or equal than b2 of gn to the power 1/4, okay, and this is the b2 to the power gn. So this is an application of Jensen inequality plus our formula for the semigroup, which was called the Mellor formula on the Poisson space, sort of hypercontractivity. And now this one, this is less than 2, and this, since f has values in z, then the absolute value has values in z plus, and therefore this guy here is less than this guy with 2^2, because this just takes values in z. Okay, it's almost, I'm a little, you know, it's not a very subtle argument, but this is exactly what things are, things that happen. So this is the integral dfn to the power 2 d mu to the power 1 over 4. And this converges to zero. In the typical situation, this converges to zero. So this means that any time you have convergence, you have a phenomenon that involves convergence to Poisson and to Gaussian, you automatically, almost automatically, in the most reasonable cases, you have asymptotic independence. Okay? So, well, yeah, no, it's 3. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, well, so now, this will yield a positive answer to the problem that I told you yesterday, but there is some other interesting question, an interesting consequence of this that, I find quite intriguing, which is the following. So, now, since we are dealing with Poisson approximations, so in the typical situation, you can always choose to take fn, that is your sequence of random variables that are meant to converge to a Poisson random variable, to be equal to your original Poisson measure computed in on some set. Okay? You just can take this. And so this means now that if you have a sequence of random variables converges to a Gaussian distribution, and this sequence, and verifying these conditions here, then automatically these random variables will be independent of E of A. Okay? Now you can go to the multidimensional case. you can apply monotone class theorem, and what you obtain is the following, is that, so this is a corollary indeed. So in the typical situation, as before, so in the typical situation, for every random variable y that is simply measurable with respect to the original original sigma field generated by eta, then you have that the vector y times gn, so a vector that converges to this, is converges always in distribution to n, where n is stochastically independent of sigma eta. Okay? So for whatever choice you take of your random variable y, then you have always asymptotic independence. And this type of convergence, as a name, is called a stable convergence, which is stronger than convergence in distribution. It gives you something more than convergence in distribution. It's a notion of convergence, which is some sort in between convergence in probability and convergence in distribution. It's weaker than convergence in probability and stronger than convergence in distribution. Okay? And so that is, therefore, Gn converges to n, one says, sigma eta stably. Okay? Okay, this is the definition. You can take this as a definition. A random variable converges stably, which represents to some sigma field, to some random variable n, which is independent of the sigma field, if the vector converges to the vector of independent random variables. This is always the case. Okay? And so, so this is the first corollary, and there is a second corollary, which is a typical corollary from the theory of stable convergence. For instance, you can find the proof in the book by Jakob and Shiryaev. There is also a nice survey now by Podolsky that tells you the following. Now, suppose you have a sequence of random variable yn, which is measurable, which are functionals of your original Poisson measure, and suppose the yn converges in probability to some limit random variable y. Okay? And then suppose that gn converges stably to some random variable n, which is independent of your original Poisson measure. Okay? Then the pair yn gn converges in distribution to yn. Okay? So now imagine that starting from this, for instance, you can now take the product of the two of them. And what you obtain is a random variable zn, which is given by the product two of them, that is going to converge to not a Gaussian random variable, but a mixture of Gaussian random variables. And then you can combine random variables in a much more complicated way and still obtain something that can be represented as a sort of conditionally Gaussian or underlying Gaussian structure. Okay? And this kind of phenomena lead to limit theorems that are not Gaussian, a non-central limit theorem, but mixed limit theorem, where the limit is a mixture of Gaussian distribution. Now, I don't have in mind a place in the stochastic geometry literature where this kind of phenomenon is absolutely relevant. But in another area where point processes of the Poisson type are relevant, that is the theory of Levy processes, or processes that are constructed from Levy processes, Levy-Volterra processes, Levy-moving averages, this kind of phenomena happens all the time when one considers, for instance, power variations. Okay, so you consider, for instance, you take a process xt, and you write this process as the integral of some random process adapted or not adapted with respect to a Levy process. So there is an underlying underlying Poisson structure. And then you study something like the power variations of this guy. So minus xt to the power p, for instance. And you study the asymptotic behavior of objects of this type. And very often, this kind of objects can be decomposed in two parts, one part that converges in probability to something, and one part that is verifies some sort of central limit theorem, and very often this convergence is stable, and so this kind of objects converge to something which is a mixture of Gaussian distributions, okay? So something which is not a central limit theorem. So this kind of result really opened the door for more general convergence in the sense of mixtures of Gaussian distributions. And, okay, so this is the discussion. And so this holds So all these kind of estimates hold in a very general, let's say remark. A similar phenomenon holds also for multivariate Gaussian limit theorems. So that means that what happens very often is that, and so this is connected to a paper by myself and a former student, Sangbo Zeng, and this is always in the another paper in the Electronic Journal of Probability. And in this paper, we proved basically that under quite general assumptions, you have the following phenomenon. So in order to prove that some d-dimensional vector of random variables converges to some Gaussian vector with some covariance matrix, so in order to prove this kind of results, the convergence in distribution to some, it is very often sufficient to prove that each coordinate converges, so each coordinate converges, and that the covariance converges to the covariance of n of this random vector n. Okay, and this kind of phenomena happen also in the Gaussian space, and not very much in the computation. That is, you can always focus just on the coordinate convergence in multivariate central limit theorem, and you don't have to care anymore concerning cross terms. And so, for instance, in the past literature, a common tool in order to prove central limit theorems of this type was the method of moments. So you have to prove that all the joint moments of these guys converge to all the joint to the joint corresponding joint moments of this guy, and this makes this method forces one to deal with cross terms of any kind. So in this kind of phenomenon, break all this, the relevance of all these terms, and exactly as it happens in the case of the Poisson distribution, of the converge to Poisson and Gaussian jointly. So in the last 2 minutes, I just write down the answer to the to the question that I raised at the very beginning of the course. Remember that, so the initial example, so remember that I was considering a collection of IID random variables with some density with values in Rm, so these are IID random variables, and then an independent Poisson process on the real line. And then I was considering the graph Gn, which is Vn En, which is such that Vn is given by the Poissonized configuration that considered the first n of little n points on the plane given by this sequence of random variables, and such that two vertices are connected if and only if they are the Euclidean distances between 0 and Tn. So this is the definition of Yi being connected to Yj, where Tn is some sequence of random of positive numbers that converge to 0. Okay? And I can consider, for instance, I can consider two integers, just a slightly more general situation, two integers, k0 and k. For instance, k0 is equal to 2 and k is equal to 3. And then I can consider two connected graphs, gamma 0 and gamma 1. This is a graph with k0 vertices, like, for instance, the edges, and this is a graph with k vertices, like, for instance, the triangles in this case. So both are connected. And now, if I fix Tn to be equal to the mth root of, if I'm not wrong, n to the power minus k over k minus 1, So you can achieve an intermediate regime in the following sense now. If you consider xn0, it is the number, so the subgraph counting statistic that counts the number of subgraphs that are isomorphic to gamma 0 in Gn. And if you take xn1 to be the counting statistic that counts the graphs that are isomorphic to gamma 1 in Gn, once again, then under this regime, you have that x tilde n0, which is xn0 minus the expectation of xn0 over the variance, converges in distribution to a Gaussian random variable. Okay, so these are the edges converge to a Gaussian, whereas xn1 converges in distribution to some Poisson random variable. Okay, to some Poisson random variable. So let's call to some Poisson random variable. And the initial question that was for the edges and the triangles is that are these two independent and at which speed? And then if you apply my former, so we have a proposition. So now the distance between x tilde, the distribution, x tilde n0 and xn1 and a vector, so it will be np, where n is a Gaussian 0, 1 random variable, and p is a Poisson random variable with mean lambda, such that the two of them are stochastically independent, so now you are studying this, is less or equal, is a big O of some quantity that I will never remember, and it is n to the power minus over 2k minus 1 plus n to the power minus k0 over 4 times k minus 1. Okay, so this is not exactly, this is not significant, this is just to show you that the computations can be quite explicit. And so, for instance, in the case now of for edges and triangles, the distance is a big O of n to the power minus over 1/8. Okay, so you can have quite a, and the distance D is completely explicit. It's just functions that are defined of the on the product space Z plus times R in such a way that for such coordinate Z plus, the other function is Lipschitz and bounded. It's really a very, very, very nice class of and natural class of test functions. Okay, and I finish here. Yes. Okay. This means that it is less or equal than some constant times this.
In the exponent, I mean, kappa?
It's kappa minus kappa 0. These are the number of vertices in the two graphs. K0 is less than K. And, okay. Okay. That's right.
And I see that this is the
You're right.
version. So if you have, for instance, if you have a process with a random measure, in our sense, it's independent increments, which is diffuse, and it must be deterministic. Yeah. If you have something more general random measure, then it must be Gaussian, but independent.
Yeah. I think you're right. I indeed think that if you take I was mentioning that we have this. There is this paper by Schulte and Taylor, where they prove that under some regimes, some point processes generated by your statistics converge towards a Poisson or Poisson-related measure, like a measure with independent increments on the real line, etc. So I think that you can combine now. You can also take some sort of linear combination of your statistics, some your statistics such that you have this phenomenon, another one that verifies some central limit theorem, and I think that the limiting object will be exactly what you say. So a random measure with a Gaussian component which is independent of the other one. And maybe this gives an explanation, or the other way around. I mean, so it's not. It is also true what you say. It shows that this is quite a natural phenomenon in view of this. Yeah. Is it not a universe?
There are some assumptions.
Yeah, of course. That's it. Yes. Okay. Thank you. And I would like to thank François.